As a white man, I figured we'd start by me explaining to everybody what diversity means. Actually, what I'd like to, I did all this research and I have these little introductions for everybody, and then I thought, you know what? Maybe instead of me introducing them, maybe have them introduce themselves. So we're getting the symbolism here right from the jump. So let's go down the row.
I'm Raina Saltmeyer, the egregiously white creator of Smile, Sisters, Drama, and The Forthcoming Ghosts, all published by Scholastic Graphics. I also adapted and illustrated The Babysitter's Club into graphic novels.
Smile, Drama, Sisters, Ghosts. Nouns.
Hi, I'm Nyla Magruder. I'm the creator of the webcomic MFK, and by day I'm an artist at Disney Television.
I'm Ronald Wimberly. I wrote and drew Prince of Cats for Image, and I did Lighten Up, which is come watch me get an Eisner. I've been known to hustle, Marvel, DC too, in the past.
I'm Ben Hatke. I work on the Zeta the Space Girl books. I've made comics and picture books. So there's the Zeta books. My book Little Robot is up for an Eisner also. And right now, the book that just came out is a picture book called Nobody Likes a Goblin, which kind of flips the script on the classic kind of D&D adventure story. So yeah, that's me.
I'm Mitty Shami, and I have a forthcoming graphic novel with First Second coming out fall 17 called Pashina. I'm Indian American, and it's about an Indian American girl growing up in Southern California who finds a magical shawl, and it helps her learn a little bit more about who she is.
Great. So the idea here for me is for me to shut up and let them talk. So with that, Nitty and the little pre-discussion we were having online, through email, you wanted to talk about diversity as a trend versus diversity as a buzzword. So can we start from that point? What is the distinction in your head? What makes diversity real versus something we're just paying lip service to?
Well, I think, through the We Need Diverse Books hashtag, the conversation has been pushed to the forefront, and I think that's really, really wonderful. But I think the fear with that as a hashtag comes and goes and dies. You want to make sure that diversity is still at the forefront, and it's not just something that people are paying lip service to and looking at their list and saying, okay, we need to check these boxes. Now that we've checked these boxes, we can move on because this trend has passed. But instead, it's a mainstay. It's something that you're committed to, and you always make it part of your plan.
Great. Anybody else want to say anything on that score?
I'll say that when I first started working professionally in comics, which was about 10 years ago, all the panels that I was invited to be on were like the women in comics. And I feel like we have in that time kind of moved away from that trend, and now it's just comics panels, and we're talking about a lot of stuff besides just what it's like to be a woman in comics. But I feel like I answered that question, 100 times in the first couple of years of my career, and it's nice to move past it, but I feel like there's a lot more work to be done.
I'm still in that world, mostly.
There are women in comics panels?
I was one man on all women's diversity in comics panel. That was maybe 2 or 3 New York Comic Cons ago, and I was like, wow. I was like, well, this at least is something different, right? But I think I'm still at a point where most of the panels that I do or I'm invited to do. A convention I did earlier this year, I was like, well, for every diversity panel that you ask me to be on, I need to be on 2 other panels that have nothing to do with diversity, or else I'm just not going to do any panels.
Yeah. Ron, you also are writing about gender with your latest.
Mm-hmm. latest to not come out yet.
Yes, Sunset Park. Yeah, it's about all of my comics are kind of about gentrification because like, it's where I live.
Well, in the book, you're using vampirism as sort of resonance with gentrification, which is a really good way to go. You also have, in the run up to this, you sent around a quote about Basquiat, which was about commodification. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that was an interesting quote that it took me a while to unpack because it was dense. There's a lot of stuff in it, so can you talk a little bit about that?
I don't have the quote in front of me, but like. There's sort of a double-edged sword when you have an identity that is readily, you know, it's a commodity, right? So the way our world, the way our culture processes things is can or cannot you sell it? Like everything has a value in the market, right? And so sometimes in order to gain visibility or even to gain like foothold as a creator, you find yourself sometimes deliberately, maybe not always deliberately, trading in on the value of your identity, you know? And for me, maybe it's being black, right? So, and it's a brand, you know what I mean? So like if I say something that the public tends to believe about blackness, you're more readily to buy it. And if you're into blackness as a commodity, you'll show up and you'll buy that thing. And it's dehumanizing in a way to, I didn't want to say the big C word, but like, you know, the way capitalism processes commodities, it's destructive. So if that commodity is your identity, it's problematic. But it was, the article was about Basquiat. The quote was about Basquiat, and it was how he traded in on that, but in the end, he was trapped by it.
Right.
You know, I hope this is not true of myself.
Well, I mean, is it a high quality problem to have? Have we come too far? Is it something we should not be? It's something we should be in a way thankful for that this even comes up. I mean, Nyla, you were working in webcomics. You want to talk about things like Kickstarter, all these alternate routes that are they adding to the mainstream? Are they an alternate to the mainstream? And is an alternate, should we wait for the mainstream to catch up? Or are these topics you're talking about, webcomics, Kickstarters, another way to engage with readers that means the mainstream just should screw off. Mainstream, we don't need you.
Yeah, at this point, I think there has been so much success with indie creators selling their work, you know, putting it online, selling it through Kickstarter, that we're at a point where we're kind of starting to surpass the mainstream as far as content goes. There's so much more variety online and in these indie comics. But at the same time, I don't want the mainstream, and not everybody agrees with me, but I don't want the mainstream to get left behind because they have a farther reach than indie creators do. I want the mainstream to keep up with us, and I know it's not possible because that's why it's the mainstream, but they still have such a large impact on our culture and on society that it'd just be great to see more momentum there as far as diversity goes.
Absolutely. You know, there's a phrase that it's not a pipeline problem, it's a broken doorbell problem. Has anybody heard this phrase? It's not that there aren't people ready to do it, it's that people are pounding on the door, but nobody's responding. It's not that we have to just do more education, get more training for people of color and women, it's that they're already there. It's just that the mainstream listen.
I think this gets back, this comes, you know, so the commodity aspect speaks to this again because in the case of the mainstream, what we've seen is that there is a way for a lot of large companies or mainstream, you know, big companies to trade on the commodity of various identities and lives of people without actually giving the voices a chance to be heard of those groups. So kind of in their own systems of production, they're able to create this commodity without actually even including the groups whose identity they're selling as a commodity.
Right.
So like if you look at, you know, the hip-hop comic covers for Marvel, I think at one point one of the editors said, he was questioned like, well, you don't have any black creators working on this or anyone who's part of hip-hop working on these books. And he's like, well, what does that have to do with anything? So that explains that this person understands that the commodity can be sold, and the trend that you were talking about before can be exploited without necessarily including any of the groups who are, especially because, you know what, everyone, we need diverse comics. You know what, people are interested in seeing people who don't look like them even. You know, you might get bored of seeing the same stuff. It doesn't even, it's not like I need to pick up a comic that looks like me. Sometimes, you know, maybe I want to read a story, you know, like a story about a queer black woman doing something. Like, you know, maybe I want to see that. Maybe it enriches my life. And if a corporation knows that that's like bankable and sellable, like they don't have to change their staff. They don't have to change their editors. You know, they don't have to hire anyone who is particularly, you know, hungry to tell their story.
Right.
They can just sell the commodity.
Right.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the back end stays the same, but what they're selling changes to meet what the market's asking for. But at the same time, actually, the system that exists still excludes, you know, and that's super problematic, especially when you see that people are making it in these independent circles, and then they don't have to take that risk because you've already put your money in, and you've already done your Kickstarter, and you've done all the work and investment. And they're like, oh, well, that sells. So let's just go to our writers, and we'll make something similar. But we're not taking any of that risk.
Right. And I kind of understand it from, you know, from the Hollywood perspective. There's a lot of nepotism, and I know why that exists. But I'll speak to this because I just had this rant on Twitter. So, like, one of the excuses that we're hearing now is that people don't want, you know, like people of color and queer creators, queer characters, disabled characters to be typecast. And so they're saying, to be specific, oh, well, but, you know, a black woman shouldn't have to just write black characters, and a white creator shouldn't just have to write white characters, you know. Yeah, it is very true. Like, why can't, you know, why are we setting these people up to be typecast? But that's not really what's happening here. Like, what we're seeing is that white creators, you know, privileged creators are allowed to write whatever they want. Meanwhile, marginalized creators are still being blocked. And I don't want to, like, I haven't looked into the history of the big two, but to my knowledge, there currently are no black women on their staffs at all. I don't think there have been very many.
You mean like an editorial or?
And as writers,
okay.
Specifically as writers. There are no black women writing mainstream comics. Over the course of how many decades these companies have been in existence, that is crazy.
But you do see black women as characters.
You
see
sure
their identities sold as commodities.
Exactly.
You know, like the commodity of being a black woman. You know, you see out there in the forefront, and when there are trends, that's exploited.
Right, exactly. And so, no, black women shouldn't just be relegated to writing black female characters, but they should be given the opportunity the same way white male creators are.
Jean Wenyang has this response when people set up to kind of strum an argument. Well, you're saying that I can't, like, as a white person, I can only write white people as a black person. He's saying anybody can write about anything. Do the research. And that doesn't mean crack a book. That means talk to people. Listen to people. Have run it past somebody and have them say, wow, no. So Raina and Ben, I mean, talk a little bit about this. What as people books is a joyful embrace of a cultural history that is not necessarily your own, but it is it feels alive, it feels real. Talk about it.
Thank you. Ghosts, which comes out in September, is about a family. The mom is Mexican, the dad is white, and I don't talk about it in the book, but the dad is Jewish. And their kids are sort of like looking for their own identity. And the kids are like, so mom, how come we don't speak Spanish at home? And how come we don't know anything about our grandparents? And I talk about like how, you know, culture sometimes gets, it fades a little bit from generation to generation. And so their grandmother was an immigrant from Mexico, but they don't know that much about her. And I have a lot of extended family that is Mexican and Puerto Rican, so I sat down with them and was just like, what was it like growing up in a Spanish-speaking household, but then not speaking Spanish outside of the household? And I just wanted to hear their stories. And I grew up in San Francisco and was surrounded by Mexican culture and Mexican-American culture, and this is one character's story, and it's a fictional character, so I felt like a lot of people were looking to me to like tell a lot of people's stories, but I was just like, I'm telling one character's story and I mean rep. So am I representing everybody's story? Absolutely not. Am I representing accurately what this experience might be like for a character? I don't know. But I didn't want to shy away from it at the same time. And I wrote a book called Drama, which is about like gay theater kids. And I was not a gay middle school boy, but I have a lot of friends who were. So again, I was just kind of looking to my own experiences and my own friends and people around me to sort of inform the characters. And most of the time, the characters that I write are based on real people. So I try to be as authentic as possible to that. But again, I know I can't speak for everybody.
Well, I mean, you can't write a book that's just populated by carbon copies of yourself.
Yeah.
So you have to write characters who aren't you, and so you have to put yourself into some other person. And I guess I have been thinking of diversity as almost an artistic practice in your writing. And you try, and so you look at each group of characters, and you say, and you realize that blended groups and groups of different in both visually and in terms of ideas and ethnicities, all these things, and even shapes on a page, and all of it of that artistically is more rich when it's more diverse, and it's but yet it's easier just in drawing and in writing in general to do the same thing again. It's always easier to do the easiest, to take what you your own little thing, and so. You were talking about like the terror or the fear that you might experience in writing a character that is very different from you. In my book, my next book that's coming out is called Mighty Jack, and it has a group of three kids kind of as the protagonists. And one of them is fairly far along on the autism scale. And I found myself like really, really nervous about how well I've portrayed that how that's going to come across, because I have a friend who I've watched grow up since he was like 8, and but this character of Maddie, she's based on like several people that I know, and I'm just really, really curious of how that's come across. And I've only gotten a few bits of feedback so far, and they seem pretty positive so far. And then also in terms of like outlook, like the other two kids, like one of them has come from like public school, and the other this girl down the road who's in the story is from a like a super like hippie like homeschooly background, and so they end up having a sort of bit of a misunderstandings based on their experiences and based on like their upbringings, and it becomes almost like a little bit of a not clash of cultures, but they just have these different outlooks, and they're bringing two different like backgrounds to this adventure story. And so I think my thing is just like looking at it as a practice, and then like I've actually found myself occasionally drawing all of my characters from all the different books. I actually do this for like cards for people and stuff if I'm writing specifically for Callista, who's my editor. I was like, I'm just going to draw her a picture of all the characters, and I drew them as like trying to look at that group and think about it, in terms of diversity in that sense too. And there's always room for growth. So
yeah.
There's always room to push yourself like further in that area. but in all areas of writing. So anyway, that's my thing.
I wanted to say, like, diversity is a sort of, I mean, it's real, you know? So when you're working on things, you know, there are different people around. So if you find yourself creating a world where, you know, if you do science fiction or whatever your story is about, you have a control, which is like reality, right? Then you choose to change something about reality, even if it's just like, you know, plain fiction. But there's a purpose to it. I think when you create something that is, you know, looks a certain way, you're purposefully saying something about that world, you know? So, like, if there are just, you know, a bunch of, you know, white men in that world, maybe you're describing a fictional space, and, like, what are you saying, you know? So, maybe it's observation. It takes a little bit of looking regardless, you know? Like, look at the world around you. And if the world around you is like that, then, like, what are you going to say about it? Like, and what does that mean? You know, I think sometimes maybe it's arguable that it shouldn't be a diverse space in your world. But what is that saying, though? You know what I mean? Like, it shouldn't just be a default. I think the default aspect of that is terrifying.
Well, the default is like what I was trying to get to is the default is laziness, mm-hmm. right? So, like, and no offense mm-hmm. to the Marvel movies, but when you look at them, there's, like, a certain, like, fit, mm-hmm. like, white guy who's saving the world, and most of them are named Chris, right? And then, you know, but that like, when you take two steps back from it, it does read as, like, artistic laziness. You're doing the same thing again and again, and you really, really want to have, you know, a variety. And that's the drum I beat with, like, making it an actual artistic practice. So.
I wrote a book about Batman, and in it I mentioned that the reason that there's a lot of gay stuff sort of hanging around that particular partnership, Batman and Robin, a lot of subtext, is because when this partnership was created, there were no queer people in media. So queer kids had nothing they could not see a version of themselves. They saw a world in which not only did they not see themselves, but a world in which they explicitly did not exist. So they created it. So they leaned in, looked a little deeper, and then found, people like me, found connections with Bruce laying a hand on Dick's shoulder. All of a sudden there's something there. Because comics as a medium are literally subtextual. There's this thing that's happening on the surface that is not talked about in the space. So we see them waking up.
When was that? When do you mean? Like, at what time period? Like, Batman? No, meaning, like, when you're saying there was a time where there was a lack of visibility. Like, I'm just trying to have an idea. No. Like, in media, so, meaning, like, so you're saying around the time when Batman was created, or?
Yeah, at the time. This is why there was this gay panic in the 50s, because and people like Frederick Wortham, long story, said, you know, there's something going on here, because there kind of was. He kind of had a point. He thought, and I'll shut up soon, he thought just seeing Batman and Robin together in a rowboat at midnight, you know, or canoodling in bed together.
It's romantic.
It's romantic. Might make kids think they're gay. He didn't realize that he had a point, but it was only for gay kids. Yeah, seeing them together might create feelings of what's going on there. My point, eventually, is that gay folk, queer folk, can create that kind of thing. But if we don't see a representation of ourselves, I have the ability to create it. Y'all didn't. You can't create it if it's not there. So, how important is it to see yourself or something like yourself in media, comics especially if you're dealing with them? And how much is it that you do want it? Fiction is fiction. Fiction exists to get you inside the head of somebody else, to look around and see the world through their eyes, but then realize emotionally you're the same. Emotionally the same, to make the same connections. It's just all the stuff around it is different. So can we just come to go with volleyball with just my ego?
I think what Raina was saying was interesting in and around the idea that you want to represent diversity, you want to try new things, and it's important. And it's important for the readers to see different characters readers who read your books who may not read a book with people who have these different identities. They are exposed to new characters. But at the same time, listening to you talk about it, you seem to have the same worries that we have, that you are then burdened with the idea that you represent everything, and that it's not just one character, and this one character has this weight that your audience is putting on them. You know, so I think as creators, we are all kind of burdened with this knowledge that you're creating a character, but this character, when you release it into the world, is expected to represent all these things and have all these experiences, but really it's just one life. And so I find that interesting, that we're all kind of struggling with similar things when we go outside of, or go inside, these topics of diversity and these characters that aren't often represented.
And it's your job as a creator. It's really hard though sometimes,
yeah.
Because that's because not just as a consumer of stories, but as a creator, that's the big challenge, and it's just, it can be super challenging. But it's the thing you have to push yourself into is another person's shoes, life, thoughts about the world, experiences that you didn't have, challenges that you didn't have, and really try to empathize with those, because otherwise the characters, like the terror is that the characters will ring false, right? So yeah, that's a big scary thing that can happen. But it's exciting too. I don't know.
I was going to say, what you said about sort of the environment, the emotional core of human beings is similar, and the environments could be different, and how you, the architecture of yourself that you build can be different,
right.
But it's truly, I mean, as a creator, it is important, and it's one of the wonderful things about being a creative is that you're forced to break through a lot of the artifice of separation, the things that separate us, to find that, and then to, like, because what it boils down to is a friend of mine said to me once, I was talking about a character, and she's human, right? And I'm like, okay, yeah, right. Yeah, she is. But like, there's some things that I'm struggling with, right? But what she said to me was just, you know, it was a nice little chin check. It was like, yo, you know, it's there and it's in you too, you know? And writing and drawing these characters, to get down to it, like, drawing is actually a whole other discussion, right? The visual language that we have in front of us. Like, I don't know if you're having to draw people who are maybe not often represented. I'm going to jump off the bridge and maybe we can come back to this if you guys want to. It's like creating new visual languages. So like, say if you grew up looking at Batman, right? But like, okay, now you're ready to tell a story. And like, you don't look like Batman. And your characters don't look like Batman, right? Like, there's no lantern jaw, you know, like sort of square-headed guy that you want to, like, that's not in there, right? But maybe a lot of the artists that you love that influenced you have this entire visual language based on things that have no relevance to the world that you're about to create. And like, that's an interesting problem that I've always had, you know? So like, okay, well, I want to draw people who look like the people in my family. I have to create a new visual language for that. I can't look at how, you know, I don't know a lot of those guys' names, but like, I don't know, Q-Bert, or, you know, I'm just picking random things out. You know what I mean? Like, I can't look at that comic and be like, oh, well, this is what these people look like because he drew maybe like...
It's like a Jim Lee Batman.
Yeah, like Jim Lee. It's like, oh, I can't look. Oh, well, you know, when you go out and you want to make a story, a lot of times shorthand is useful. You pick an artist that you really love and you're like, okay, I'm going to take this and this is how they draw that, and like, maybe I'm going to build on that. But like, when you're drawing things from a new space, sometimes like, you don't even have anything to pull from, and that's amazing because that creates new images and graphics, you know, like, and that's another reason why we need diversity. It makes things more interesting, and that's exciting. So it shouldn't be a pity party. It's just like, celebrate that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting how people associate like the manga style of drawing and anime style of artwork with like being Asian. And it's like, is that accurate? And then you get into problems like respending with happened with the Avatar The Last Airbender movie adaptation a couple of years ago, and they cast a bunch of white people as Aang and Katara and Sokka, and everybody's like, no, they're clearly Asian, and a lot of white people were like, no, they're not, they have big eyes, and it was like, oh gosh, styles of artwork are so complicated, and what people associate with styles of artwork are so complicated, and I think what you're saying is exactly right. It's like, how do you create a new visual language that represents what you see in front of you? And I mean, the Japanese style of drawing has existed since, what, the 50s, but it was based on, like, the way that Disney animators drew characters.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about this purely the art, because this is comics, right? It really frustrates me when I re-review a graphic novel and I get to the end and I don't even know it's a graphic novel because it just never mentioned the art. Because I think a lot of critics, a lot of reviewers just talk about story. Let's talk purely about the art. So what are you thinking about in terms of reflecting a world that's not a monolithic world? Art is more interesting the less monolithic it gets because it reflects the world. So in superhero comics, which are about maintaining the status quo, it's perhaps not surprising that superhero comics are the last bastion of the status quo, of things being exactly where they are. But you guys are creating independent stuff, your own stuff, where the art is completely up to you. So what goes into that? I know it's tough to talk about.
I feel like I see a lot of good stuff happening in that realm. Because, like, I don't know why I keep coming back to that. I think I was talking about it earlier today, the 90s Justice League cartoons, and it's hilarious because if you strip everything away, all the costumes away, like, all those body types are exactly the same, like Green Lantern and Superman, they're the same, you know, they're the same shape, and I think the type of work that I see like, on the in the circle that I'm, you know, this kind of, like, sort of indie, sort of, just not mainstream superhero books, I think there's becoming a great diversity of both style and just human shapes, you know. And there's, I don't know. I see a lot of good things happening there. I don't know. Like Nimona, it's great. There's all kinds of stuff going on in Nimona. It's wonderful. And there's all kinds of, like, different looking people. And I don't know. Stuff like that is really cool. I see more and more of it, I feel like. So I feel like that's actually a positive thing.
That's the thing I pay attention to the most, too, is I pay attention to people's body language, and I always have, and I think body language is fascinating, and people have different body languages, and people with different types of bodies have different types of body languages, and I love looking at animators' gesture sketches, I love looking at figure drawing, I love looking at animation, and where we're going with it these days is wonderful. And again, it really does come back to just observing the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
And Nami, your style is your style. It's distinctly yours. That's one of the things you hope for as an artist, I suppose.
And that's the thing you're stuck with. I mean, you can work on it, but you do have to be true to, like how you draw a thing and making it look like how you draw the thing.
So in terms of storytelling, what influences are you using? What are you thinking about? What are you thinking about?
That's a good question about, I'm sorry, no, everybody else needs to be able to, but it's a good question of, like, actually, what are you feeding yourself, you know, artistically, is a good question. So that I'd like to know.
I've been working on Pushmina for 5 years. It's super painful. but, you know, I love it, and at the origin point, you know, it's a book about an Indian American girl, so I'm looking around, and to my knowledge, and I'm new to comics, there are no other graphic novels with that kind of character set. And so, obviously, I'm limited to my style, but I'm also like, okay, well, I need to pull together some points of reference. It's drawing at a level that I have never done before because of all the gesture and all the different poses that you have to do. It's very challenging. But I have a nice stack of books. You know, I have The Sculptor, I have Smile, I have Anya's Ghost, I have a lot of books that I turn to when I'm wondering how do I structure this page, you know, what works in terms of paneling, how do I take control of the page turn. There are all of these things that definitely during thumbnailing that you have to be aware of, and it's nice to have visual language that somebody else has worked on really hard. For you to reference, but at the same time being aware that I have my own artistic limitations, and also I'm doing something that has a visual been done before. There's a lot of pattern work in my book. And so that's like, how much do I overwhelm you as the reader with henna-like pattern? You know, how much can you take? And I don't want to overly stimulate you with the art. I want the art to be good, but I also want the story kind of to be the top. Because in my view, I think that the story will serve much more than the art. And I think maybe that's why reviewers focus so much on story, because to a certain extent, sometimes if the art is good, it's just good. Yeah. You don't have to talk about it. Maybe if they're talking about it, it's bad. Or, you know.
I think it's a shortcoming of reviewers to not look at the art and understand that there's a lot going on intellectually in the art aspect of it. There's a lot of people give themselves all types of constraints. People give themselves like you can have a narrative just in the art about how you're putting the art on the page and how you're dealing with that space. Could be saying a whole lot about, you know, if you look at the difference between, say, early Western comics to like what happened in the, you know, after the 90s, after, you know, a lot of the panels started to break. And then getting to the point now where it's like they're almost storyboards. There you have a narrative about the values in comics, you know, for that particular superhero comics, right? How figures are treated in the space, you know? Could be saying more than what the words are saying. Absolutely. In the comic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's maybe reviewers and people who look at comics. I had a buddy who was talking to me about comics, and he's like, he's an academic, he's a doctor. And then I said something about, oh, well, there's this rhythm happening here, and this is very important. This was a formalist constraint that I used. And he's like, wow, I didn't even think about that. I'm like, dude, all you do is sit around and look at comics, man. Like, you didn't see that pattern? Like, you didn't pay attention to this in the same way you pay attention to, say, art in a gallery or, like, literature.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well, this is the thing. I think we're trained to read prose and understand how, after paragraph, we get to understand tone and mood and style. But in a comic, it's there on page one. It is in the composition and the color and the thickness of the line. That's what you get after a chapter. And that's why I always say we read books, but we feel comics. And it's pre-verbal. It's elemental. So, Nyla, is there anything about your particular style, anything you bring to it, anything you look to?
Well, my influence, I always say, is mainly shonen comics. So, action-adventure, like Naruto, Bleach, One Piece. But I sorely lack, I think, good color reference. Like, my biggest influences are all these black and white comics, and then for some crazy reason I decided to do a comic in color. So, and not being very good at color at all. And so that's always at the forefront of my mind, is the color and the lighting. Because those two things, like, they kind of work on the reader on a subliminal level. Like, color informs so much of the story emotionally. And so, and especially working with, you know, different skin tones, like a variety of skin tones in my comic, and like finding understanding of how to handle those different skin tones and different lighting scenarios. You know, that's constantly what I'm struggling with and what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, another thing that reviewers never mention is color.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna throw it open to some questions. I'm sure y'all have some. So just raise your hand. Yes.
So I'm going to ask a little bit psychologist comments.
You look like you need to see a doctor. That's terrifying.
Yeah. My question is basically about accountability. So the example that I'm going to use is that when I started watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer about a year ago, and having the local relationship, obviously, was very clear to me as a queer woman, like, had them sterilized. And I actually met Joss Whedon and spoke to him at length about that sterilization process behind it, and was given a sort of explanation that he had been working with so many restrictions and limitations within the network that it was impossible to realistically depict what is a very physical thing. And then, you fast forward to nowadays, and like as you said, when the market value of an identity changes, it's commodified in a different way. So you get the nightmare that is queer sex scenes with something like Blue Forms Color. But you get a lot more, you get a different form of representation, but still ultimately no humanization of these characters. And my question, I suppose, is that every year or so, there's new outrage about something that has been whitewashed or something that has been just written in a very productive way. Very little seems to be changing, or things change, but the fundamental problem of commodifying and mass producing identities does not. What do you think? And I know it's a very tough question, but who do you think should be held accountable for that? And are we holding the right people accountable?
I talk too much.
I'm thinking right now about Ghostbusters and how obviously Holtzman is everyone's favorite character because he's awesome. But is it Feig or Feig? How do you say his last name? And I guess didn't he say that the studio was basically don't say that she's gay and don't be outright about it, but it's okay to hint toward it. Why can't you just say that? So it's very, very frustrating to see that happening. But I like that at least the rest of the internet is we're just going to make a bunch of gifs. So I feel all of us know and all of us want it, but there's still gatekeeping happening at the top, and that sucks, and we need to change that. So why don't all of you go out and become gatekeepers? That's really all I can say. I think that rings true with creators as well. It's if you see something you want, it's okay to make that thing. And the more people making things, the better. The more voices we have speaking out loud, the better.
Right. I agree. The internet, how far it's come, the ability to amplify voices has been really crucial. I don't know how many people remember this happening, but a few years ago, Disney Channel had a TV show, and I'm blanking on the name, but there was an episode where they depicted two moms. And that show was canceled almost immediately because some advocacy group protested it. And so, sometimes there's a lot of pressure from the networks, but some of that pressure is based on, advocacy from these hate-filled groups. And so I think if we want to see more diversity, we kind of have to scream louder than even that. And we need to show these studios that, hey, there is a market for it, hey, we're going to support it if you put it out there.
Yep.
Yes.
Wait. I was gonna say something, but I was trying to be polite, and I'm being rude.
But gotta jump.
All right. So okay, who do I hold accountable? Who do I hold accountable? Who do I hold accountable to change things? Would be. Well, it's the same people, creatives, right? Because at the end of the day, sometimes you're not going to fight the battle. You're going to take an L. You need to pay rent. Okay, I'm going to do this project, right? It's not exactly how I want it to be. I'm not going to fight this editor tooth and nail, right? But every once in a while, pull your, under 18 years of age, do what you got to do, right? Whedon, that was a problem, but it seems like a lot of the stuff that you've done this entire time is safe. What is the example of you really going against the grain and maybe, once you've made all of that money, putting your career at risk for something that you believe in? You can hold somebody accountable for that. And it's every time you make a choice, right? sometimes you make a choice you gotta eat, right? But every once in a while, like if you ate a couple times, like why don't you make a choice to be like, you know what? No, I'm not changing it this time. Or you know what? Hey, you know, like I'm gonna do this side project, and this side project is gonna be 100% what I wanted that other one to be, right? Or I'm gonna say something about it. I'm gonna risk making a little bit of money by putting somebody on blast. I'm gonna let people know what it's like. So people start to get afraid of being that person who's gonna come up to you and be, oh, well, I don't know if they should be so physical in this scene. Yo, make them as afraid to say that as you are to put yourself out there. You know what I mean? Make if I gotta be uncomfortable, everybody gotta be uncomfortable.
With all due respect to much of his nothing,
so I was recently, I moderated a panel about Harry Potter, because I'm a nerd, but about representation and identity in Harry Potter, and one of the panelists said something that's really stuck with me, which is like, we were talking about like the new canon and stuff, and how J.K. Rowling could describe like a trolley cart on a train like perfectly, and he was in London and a trolley cart went by and he was like, oh my god, like that is what she wrote. But can't describe, you know, a person of color, or, you know, and not being, like, explicit. And you don't really have that in comics, right? So you don't get to, I mean, you do have, like, the default whiteness, but you have to draw them white, right? And, like, in prose, you can just kind of not physically describe someone, and it's still default as white. So in comics, is there a way in which you just, the surrounding characters are like, you know, physically diverse and different body types and different things like that, and you can, like, even just having them in the background is, you know, like, important, because it at least shows that there are people in the world that may not be the main character, but, you know, like, I'm not gonna go to New York and not see anyone of color ever, like, that, like you said, it's not real. So, what is that, like, I don't know if this is even pertinent or whatever, but, like, in superhero comics, things like that, like, there are no background characters that, you know, reflect diversity, really. So what is that battle like? Is that just laziness as well? Or is it, you know, like you said, like, is that, like, a way to be subversive?
Did you guys see that tweet about coloring the background characters?
I didn't.
Do you remember? Can you?
Oh, Lord. Shoot. Yeah, who do you remember who
it was? Julian, do you remember the artist who wrote that tweet about coloring background characters? No, it was a writer. Okay. You know what? I can check Twitter, but you can.
Yeah,
I'm super curious now.
So basically, this guy, you know, was kind of putting it out there. Hey, writers, editors, if you see art coming back and the crowds and panels are homogenous, you know, just say, hey, you know. Like, he kind of made the point that sometimes he'll send it back to the editor and say, hey, this character is supposed to be Latino. Hey, this is supposed to be a black character. Because sometimes, and I've observed this myself working in film, like, sometimes the artist is just not thinking about it, and they'll just, you know, it's very easy to just hit fill and use one color. And, you know, it kind of, the same kind of goes for, you know, portraying disabled characters in crowds too. Like, sometimes you just, sometimes, especially when you're drawing crowds, because it's a lot of people, you know, you just take the easy way out. But, you know, like, even that you have to be mindful of, just the same way that, you know, casting directors need to be mindful of who's occupying the crowds in a scene, like, artists need to think about varying skin tone, varying body types, you know, in crowd scenes.
Kurt Busiek?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what it comes down to a lot of times is artists, how much, like, do you care? Do you care about creating a world that's, like, I don't know. Worlds don't have to be real, you know, like, people will put, like, I look at Toriyama. You know, Toriyama puts, like, little animals and stuff in the background, you know?
Right.
Like, you care enough to put those little animals in the background? Like, you put anything in the background, like, do you care about it? you know, you're sitting there, and maybe sometimes it's a deadline. You're a white guy, it's a deadline, and you got to draw like 30 people in the background, and like they all look like you. Like that's you in drag, that's you with like, you know what I mean? Like that's you tall, that's you short, you know what I mean? Like I dig it. I've been there, right? Like I understand that, you know? So there's always that. You know what I mean? There's always that.
Well, I mean, it's also like, what's your normal?
Mm-hmm.
My normal would be a whole sea of Indian mm-hmm. people. You know? So, but.
And like, say something about it.
Right. But then that's like a statement, you know? Mm-hmm. But like a whole sea of the homogenous white crowd, that's not a statement. So, I mean, I think it's about shifting your normal, you know? And it's about being intentional. Even in a crowd scene. But, you know, I think it's also what we consume. We consume the white friends, you know, the white New York friends. Like, that is not... I have such problems with that.
Girls, updated. girls, updated. Girls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Girls.
But, you know, anyways.
And, you know, here's my question. If you're portraying... And if you live in a city like New York and you're portraying New York and your crowd scenes are all white... What does that mean about what you're seeing as you're out on the street?
Yeah.
Because there's no way that you can walk down Manhattan and not see brown people unless you're like deliberately or subconsciously.
Bloomberg
just...
worked hard. It's getting that way. Uptown. he worked hard.
I mean, your average metropolis street scenes, they're all white, yes, but they're also jacked. The obesity epidemic has not been addressed. Yes, sir.
There's been, like, you know, a lot of talk about the whole Ghostbusters being all female recently. And I guess my question is there, with all the different aspects of diversity, LGBT, that concerns the disabled community, the black, African American, Hispanic community, is there one aspect of diversity that's kind of harder to push through than others? And then the other thing is, if you are addressing diversity, do you feel pressure to saturate it with different aspects of diversity or just focus on one?
Where are we these days?
I think it's hard to depict ableism and really attack that head on. Also think you don't really see a lot of comics about old people.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of different things. There's a lot of different pockets we still need to represent. But it's also being aware of things that you are willing to research, willing to put story out about. But it's also about what do you want to create? You know, what interests you? So I think, you know, you have to manage all of these things. You know, what am I interested in? What do I want to represent? And what can I take on while still serving the story?
We got time for one more question right there.
I always clap for that.
Hi. So my question is about social movements. And so in terms of social justice, what do you feel is the responsibility of comics to reflect that and to also just take note of it existing? So I'm thinking of Black Lives Matter. I'm transgender issues, which are very different than queer issues, and also undocumented folks. Like, where do you see that going, if anywhere? Which is probably both. But what are your thoughts on that and supporting and reflecting social movements? Not just the literal representation of, oh, I see.
Historically.
Comics, but we also need diverse creators, right?
Yes.
And we need people who are in different mental spaces and different grappling with different issues and willing to grapple with different issues, you know, like, and trying, and that's why.
That's what I was asking.
I keep coming back to the fear thing, because, like, be gentle with your creators, because, like, sometimes you're trying, and, you know.
You don't have to be gentle on me. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you could say what you're gonna say.
But you talk about, you know, like sometimes you gotta push through this.
It's
thing,
true.
You know, thing,
like, and like, you know, the people are gonna say things, and you know, like, okay, I'm here, I'm more visible, so like, you're gonna throw your darts, and maybe sometimes you need to hear it. I think I agree 100%. Like, one of the things I think is really important, us, like, we're a little bit on, we got on a little bit. When you have an opportunity, when you see excellence in, like, a place that's maybe not so conventional, like, yo, hand the mic off. You know what I mean? Like, maybe, you know, intro somebody to somebody else. Like, maybe you don't need to, like, that's maybe what a lot of these people at the Big Two need to do. Maybe you don't need to write a book about, like, a black whoever. Maybe you need to be like, you know what? And maybe you can still write that book, but maybe you can be like, well, why don't we get this guy? I know this is an assistant, whatever. Why don't we get them the assistant edit whatever book as, like, Captain America? Like, maybe it's not black Captain America. Maybe it's like, you know, well, let's get someone else. Dude, I think that's on the inside. That's what we need to do to address these movements. So, like, you know, try to deliberately change the spaces that we're in. You know what I mean? And be... may go out of your way sometimes. Maybe you feel a little uncomfortable, like, oh, I see a party popping off with all these people. I'm just going to put myself into this space. I'm going to force whatever hang-ups I have to be, you know, addressed by putting myself in this space or inviting these people into my space. And then, like, who knows? Like, that's how, I mean, you write stories about the people that you're around, you know? So, and also, as a creative, one of the things that I've had to address is, like, this year, with a lot of the things that are happening in my town, and I, unfortunately, probably in all of your towns with, like, the violence, is that, you know, sometimes I gotta be like, okay, well, I'm not gonna make a comic about this. I'm just gonna go outside and I'm gonna, like, do something. You know, like, I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna walk with people. Or I'm gonna go out and, like, you know, I'm gonna be a part of my community. Because ultimately, yeah, you're there, you have, you know, your creative things that you need to do, but, like, also you're a body. Like, you need to engage these things directly. And, like, what are you going to do? You're not going to write about Black Lives Movement if every time you see them they're on TV. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to write about whatever, you know, trans people, you know, just from watching, what was that show? Orange is the New Black or some wild shit. You know what I mean? Like,
feeding yourself.
Yeah, yeah, like, no. Go out and be around people, you know?
What's cool, though, is that comics, it's like journalism. I mean, comics can just be written in the moment. So, of course, you know, 10 years, 20 years from now, we'll get books and stories written about what's happening right now, but people are also writing right in the moment. And I love that people go on Tumblr and make amazing comics about something that happened yesterday, and then they get 70 billion, like, reblogs in an hour. And I mean, I think, like, YouTube is a really powerful place, and videos are just a really powerful way of communicating information, but I feel like comics is right out there. So I'm really pleased with the power of comics. Share ideas.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. The power of comics. The combination of words.